for sure in the second quarter. We just had better game plan discipline, and that helped us. I think it was 42-27 in the second quarter. And in the first quarter, we scored like 39 points off of paint touches with the ball, and that was a big key. That helped us score, and we just defended a lot better.
That was Monty Williams on what the difference was for the Suns after the first quarter and then the following three quarters. From the end of the first quarter on, the Suns outscored the Oklahoma City Thunder 105-64.
Sure.
In 2, 3, and 4.
Eddie Johnson said it early in the broadcast. EJ was like, look, they're probably going to win this game by double digits. He was right. It was just a matter of getting DeAndre back. They were a little bit out of sync. Cam Johnson just joined us on the show and, admitted to that. They were definitely a little out of sync and rhythm. And then once they started to play and took it to Oklahoma City, that team folded. They folded because they just didn't have the players to keep up. I mean, they were going to battle as hard as they could when they had the lead. But once the Suns started to knock down shots and threes and play Suns basketball, it's, again, they punched Oklahoma City in the mouth, and Oklahoma City, at that point, they were done. They didn't want to get punched in the mouth anymore.
Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma City, and you knew it wouldn't take much of a punch to knock Oklahoma City out. Look at who they weren't playing in this game. Look at the guys who were sitting, and who were there were Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or
Gallinari.
Gallinari didn't
Schroeder.
Play today. Schroeder didn't play today. Steven Adams didn't play today. Nerlens Noel didn't play today. It wasn't going to take much, and especially on the second night of a back-to-back, the second day of a back-to-back. It's not like they were going to ride Chris Paul and have him play 37, 38, 39 minutes to try to get a win that they really
Good
didn't
point.
Need.
Yeah.
Once that second half, and that to me, if you're going to ask me what the key was for me, it was the start of that third quarter when the Suns had a one-point lead. Rubio, two-point shot. Booker, a pull-up jumper. Mikal Bridges, a three.
Back-to-back threes by Booker somewhere in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, back-to-back. And as quickly as the Suns were able to extend that lead up to 10, you could just feel the reality of the moment kind of settle in for everybody, right? Hey, look, you're not playing anybody. We know Chris Paul's not going to play very much in the second half. We know you don't have that much to play for, and you're trying to rest guys because you're on the second. Once you got up 10 in the first part of the third quarter, you were able to let that game settle into the rhythm and the routine that it needed to fall in, one where you knew the Suns were going to win and probably going to win big given everything that was at stake. It just took a little longer to get there than we expected because of Ayton's, missed COVID test.
We're about two wins away from owing Greg Esposito a dinner. Guy bet us that he said that they would go 8-0 in the bubble, and we said, yeah, okay.
Well, wait, was the bet 8-0 or was the bet playoffs?
8-0.
You sure?
I thought it was playoffs.
I thought it was playoffs, too.
See, I asked him the other day. He said it was 8-0.
Well, he's trying to get a free dinner out of
you. A little revisionist history from Espo.
Absolutely. I need to go back and look at the tweet. I thought it was playoffs. I didn't think it was 8-0.
Really?
I think he might, might be trying to scam a dinner out of you. I mean, that Espo, he's a sneaky character.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to look.
Yeah, we'll have to check on that. In the meantime, Monty Williams with another great point. Because of the big lead, Devin Booker didn't have to play extended minutes in this game. A lot of guys didn't have to play extended minutes, and that's good because they've got a back-to-back tomorrow.
It's obviously important to, on a back-to-back to get Ricky and Book and all the guys who've been playing heavy minutes a little bit of rest, but everybody's pretty tired at this point, but at the same level. So it may be an advantage for us, but we got to take advantage of it.
Devin Booker played 29 minutes. Ricky Rubio only played 21. Javon Carter played 37 minutes in this game. Campaign.
Can I mention how good he was on Saturday for 2 seconds?
Please do.
My God, was he great on Saturday against the Heat. I mean, I know we're talking about this game against Oklahoma City. They beat the Heat in the bubble to move to 5-0. And I thought Javon Carter, and they played without Jimmy Butler and Goran Dragic and Kendrick Nunn and then the rookie forward, Paula, he didn't play either. Javon Carter was best game. Season high, 20 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. He was sensational for them, and I want to give him some credit for how well he played in helping them beat the Heat.
Yeah, he played fantastic, especially when a lot of the main guys didn't play all that well. I mean, Booker obviously did. He was amazing, 35 points, 3 rebounds, 6 assists. He only had one turnover, which is remarkable given how much ball handling he did in that game. DeAndre Ayton, I was talking about this with a friend yesterday, to go show you how talented DeAndre Ayton is. He did not play well against Miami at all on Saturday. Not at all. And he still had 18 and 12, right?
Yes.
I mean, defensively, he was completely a non-factor in that game. He didn't appear to be engaged whatsoever in that contest, and yet he can still get you 18 and 12. Ricky Rubio, Mikal Bridges, the two of them combined to start 0 of 8 from the floor in that game against Miami. They kind of rallied it together and had a better second half. But you're absolutely right. Javon Carter off the bench, the 6-3 pointers. And that's been part of this story, too. Some of the unlikely sources of points and play.
Cameron Payne, Javon Carter, at times Mikhail.
Dario Saric.
Yep. Dario's played well. Yeah, and listen, you know, the Suns have to be a little careful here, right? Because eventually you've got to figure out, do you want to bring this team back? Do you want to bring Dario back and Payne back and Javon Carter back? Now, do you judge this team on the first 62 games they played? Or do you judge them on the 8 games in the bubble? You got to be very careful because usually you don't make decisions on, you know, small sample sizes. You know, they are playing a lot of teams that, you know, are sitting guys and not playing everybody, or they're taking their best players and are only playing them 20 minutes. And so, you know, you do have to be somewhat careful with how you judge these wins in the bubble. But what we see, we definitely like.
I think if we're talking specifically about Saric, I mean, it's all about price with him, right?
100%.
I mean, it comes down to cost. Yeah. And depending on how much he gets paid this offseason, if it's a reasonable amount, because I get it. You know me, I'm sample sizes, and I think the more you can get, the better when it comes to that. But it's possible they've found the formula when it comes to Saric on how to extract the most value out of him.
Play him off the bench.
Play him 22 minutes off the bench. Have him anchor that second unit.
Not be the starting power forward trying to play 35 minutes, yeah.
And if you don't have to pay him a lot because he doesn't get much in the way of offers and you can bring him back to play that role.
He's still young.
And small sample size be damned. I think what you've seen is that maybe it just took you all season to figure out the best way to ask Dario Saric to contribute to your basketball team. And as long as you can get him back at a price that's right, bring him back.
I've always thought that if Saric wanted $10 million or more, I don't want to pay him that. He's making about 3.5. If he would play for 6 to 7 on a 3-year deal, would I give him $20 million for 3 years? Sure. I'll give him $20 million for 3 years. I don't want to give him 30.
No.
Or 35.
No. No.
So there is a number that makes sense for him, and it is a number that doesn't make sense.
Once again, the Suns will be taking on the Sixers tomorrow. If you missed us talking about it earlier, tomorrow it's basically a triple header, and all of these games matter for the Phoenix Suns. The Suns are taking on the Sixers tomorrow at 1:30. We already know Ben Simmons won't play. We just learned about a half hour ago that Joel Embiid will not play. So, once again, it's going to be a similar situation to what it was today.
And Julius Erving is not walking through that door.
Moses Malone.
Mark Iveroni. Maurice Cheeks is not walking through that door.
Allen Iverson is not walking through that door.
He's not walking through that door.
Charles Barkley is not walking through that door.
Nope.
Suns.
Mike Jaminski is not walking through that door. Jeff Ruland is not walking through that door.
Suns, Sixers. You should do it in the dueling Gambo's voice, though. Bickley and Murata.
Bobby Jones is not walking through the door.
Jones.
Maurice Cheeks. Julius Erving,
Iverson,
Mark Iveroni.
At the same time, the Suns are playing the Sixers tomorrow. Well, okay, a half hour later after the tip time. The Celtics play the Grizzlies, and then in an hour and a half after that, the Trailblazers play the Mavericks. Once again, let's reiterate, Memphis cannot win one more game. If they do, the Suns cannot catch them. They must go 0-2.
Yes.
And you have reported that you believe the Celtics are playing just about everybody tomorrow.
What I'm hearing is that the Celtics, after playing very poorly against Orlando, winning the game but playing poorly, that the Celtics' plan is to play well, to play everybody. They will try to win that game. That's the word I'm getting from Boston. So I expect that they will not sit their players tomorrow. Now, Washington, when they play Washington, they'll likely sit guys. But I am expecting that they do not sit guys against the tomorrow when they play Memphis.
And then the Trailblazers taking on the Mavericks tomorrow. The Suns need Portland to lose one of their remaining two games. They can't allow the Portland Trailblazers to go 2-0.
Nothing to play for Portland, but for Dallas. But you know, who knows? I mean, you just don't know, right? I mean, maybe some guys will get an opportunity. Somebody goes crazy, goes off and plays really well. I mean, Brooklyn's been playing really well, so you know, you just gotta listen. The Suns need help; they got to get it from somewhere.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, it was the comment that caught all of our attention here in the Valley, and it came with a hefty price. What does Devin Booker think about Draymond Green's quote that Book needs to get out of Phoenix? You'll hear what Booker said about it next on the Burns and Gambo show.
It's great to see Book playing well and Phoenix playing well, but get my man out of Phoenix. It's not good for him. It's not good for his career. Sorry, Chuck, but they got to get Book out of Phoenix. I need my man to go somewhere where he can play great basketball all the time and win because he's that type of player.
Are you tampering?
Maybe.
Yeah, he was.
Idiot.
And it cost him $50,000.
Good.
Which is the most you can find a player in the NBA without them appealing it.
Good.
So there was a reason it was that particular amount. They fined him for tampering. And I know, did he respond? I saw that you issued a challenge for him
sure.
to come on the show.
He probably doesn't want to lose another 50 grand.
Did you hear from him? Did you hear back from him
I
at
don't
all?
Think I have.
No,
yeah, I called him out pretty good. I mean, because the guy's, listen, he's being a moron. And I said this, okay, and I'll be honest. I mean, if he would have said it a year ago, 2 years ago, makes a lot of sense. To say that comment now is just you're ill-advised, okay? You're not educated. The Suns are night and day difference from what they were. They hired a competent coach in Monty Williams, an experienced coach. They gave him the keys to the city, gave him a 5-year deal. They paid him a lot of money. They finally paid a coach money instead of going on the cheap. They brought in good front office people. Not only James Jones, who has a really good rapport with the players and a good head on his shoulders, and that isn't that far removed. But then they brought in Jeff Bowers, who was a GM in Detroit with the Pistons, who can, you know, help James Jones. So front office is better. Coaching is better. They added veteran players, right? The Ricky Rubio signing was a really good signing. I mean, it really, you know, evened things up for the Suns, leveled things off. I mean, it really helped them. And the Dario Saric deal and then adding Baines and the draft pick of Cam Johnson. They're doing a lot of things right. So to sit there and say, oh, you got to get out. Well, why would he get out now when it's just about to get better?
Yeah.
Why would he get out now when the future, it's here? Like, you don't have to look at the light at the end of the tunnel. Like it's there. You could see that you're coming out of the tunnel and that this team is on the verge of being respectable and good. I'm not saying they're going to win a championship, but they are so much closer to being good than they were in any of the previous Booker years.
Yeah, so Devin Booker had a chance to respond to this, and this is from the post game on Saturday after they beat the Heat. He was asked about Draymond's Green comments, and here is what Devin Booker had to say.
I mean, I feel like that's important, you know, for this organization, for the fans that stuck by us for this long, and still do so. Like I said, since I've been in Phoenix, we haven't had the win success that we have, but the support's been there. And this is what we owe. This is what we owe to the fans. We owe to the organization. You know, it's been a long time for us, and you know, I think this bubble opportunity was big for us, and we're taking advantage of it.
I mean, look, here's the thing. I know that Booker narrative, it exists, and it's not going to go away anytime soon just based off of what we know about NBA players and the Suns.
Why wouldn't it go away now when you see the success they're having in the bubble? Couldn't it?
It could go away, but I as long as people like Draymond Green keep bringing it up, it won't go away.
National media, what's a surprise team for next year? Phoenix Suns.
Sure. But does that mean the talk about Devin Booker wanting to go away goes away with it? Not necessarily.
Maybe.
It should.
Maybe.
It should.
I think as long as
Draymond Green and the Draymond Green types keep bringing it up, it will continue to be a narrative. I mean, you saw it on Friday. We were on the air when it happened. Everything the Suns had accomplished up until that point became a secondary story on Friday afternoon the minute Draymond Green said what he said, right? And suddenly Draymond Green basically hijacked the Suns bubble from the Suns for about 2 hours. Draymond Green made the story about Devin Booker and what he thinks about Devin Booker and where Devin Booker's going to stay or whether he's going to go or whether he's going to ask out. So I don't think it can be a story. You don't think it can be. But guys like Draymond Green can make it a story every time they bring it up. Every time somebody out there in this world suggests Devin Booker shouldn't want to be on the Suns, it becomes a story the minute they say it.
I
disagree with that?
No, the stage that he set it on that show is, you know, that's the biggest NBA show, right?
Right.
You know, Barkley and Shaq and Kenny, like that shows. Everybody watches that show, so everybody heard what he said.
If Paul Pierce had said it on ESPN, would it be any different?
Probably, yes, probably. I think it would have been different. I think it would have been.
I'm just wondering, is it not a story because we don't want it to be, or because it actually isn't a story? Because it
story. It's been a story for a long time. The question is, when does it stop being a story? And Draymond Green just added fuel to a fire that was... What's a fire called when it starts to, you know, get lower? What's that called? Sweltering or
a
fire? When a fire starts
smoldering?
To go out, fire? Smoldering. Thank you. Wait, smoldering?
What'd you say, Jordan?
Smoldering.
Yeah, smoldering. Yeah,
smoldering.
Okay.
Fire. Yeah.
Right. It's the Booker talk of him leaving is a smoldering fire now, because of Monty, because of the front office, because of Saric and Baines and Rubio. And Cameron Payne, because of cap space going forward, draft picks going forward, the best practice facility in the NBA will be owned by the Phoenix Suns. They will have the number one. So when you start to put all these things together, it should be a smoldering fire.
I to answer your question, and I don't know if you'll agree with this or not, if a Draymond Green type says what he says, it isn't a story when the Phoenix Suns have completed a full regular season and are in the Western Conference playoffs. Then Draymond Green can yap all he wants. Yeah. Who cares? You got and not to diminish this 8-0 or potential 8-0, but as you said a minute ago, it's hard to judge things on small sample sizes, right? It's hard to judge a team.
Gotta be careful.
On small sample sizes. You got to be careful.
Yep.
So let's not presume that after six games in the bubble that the Suns have arrived and that it's done and that it's finished and the work has been completed.
Sure.
My opinion, when comments like Draymond Green and others who continue to insist that Devin Booker is going to want out of here, they cease to become a story when the Phoenix Suns play an 82-game schedule and when they qualify for the Western Conference playoffs.
Yep.
And they don't need a bubble to do it, and they get in on their own merit, and they get in over
the course
of a long season.
But don't you feel like they're on the verge of that?
I do, but obviously not everybody else feels the same way.
The Suns' winning percentage right now is at 451.
Mm-hmm.
When the hell was the last time they had a winning percentage that high?
I think it was Hornacek's first year, if I remember.
It might have been a second, because I think they were somewhat decent in a second, too. But it's still not 500, right? So you don't get excited about a 451 winning. It's respectable.
Yeah, there's work to be done for the Suns.
Right, but they're putting in that work. That's what I'm saying. If you don't see what's happening here, now listen, this doesn't mean they make the playoffs next year, but they're certainly not a bottom five team in the NBA anymore.
No.
They're not. They're a competitive team that should challenge for a playoff spot every year. That's it.
Yep. I think it's despicable that Draymond Green did what he did, said what he said. I really do, because
I thought it was idiotic.
It took all of the attention off of the Suns, and it put it back on this storyline that continues to be discussed, and it quiets down, then it sparks back up again. When I was on vacation, it was all about the Knicks, right?
I did tweet out that, can they find Stephen A. Smith now?
What is it going to take for moments like that to go away?
You're right. What you said before.
It's going to take the Suns qualifying for the playoffs.
You're right.
And not needing the help of a bubble to do it. But until then, Devin Booker talked about everything that went on today in the game. He was asked if he's surprised by the success of the Suns in the bubble.
No, I wouldn't say surprised, man. From the moment we got down here, you know, it's been high energy and competitive. I don't know if we're going to win and lose, but I know we have some guys in the soccer room that aren't going to back down, you know, from any matchup or, you know, any competition. So, you know, we're having fun with it. And like I said, you know, the way we're communicating, the way we're helping each other out and holding each other accountable, you know, is the reason for our success.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show today, the fate of the college football season is hanging by a thread over the next 24 hours. And it might be the beginning of some radical conference realignment, depending on how it all plays out. We'll give you the latest next on the Burns and Gambo show. Welcome back to the Burns and Gambo show on this Monday. It's been a crazy day in college football, and it could potentially get even crazier. I mean, like, the kind of crazy, it's kind of hard to imagine kind of crazy, right? Like
it feels like it's inevitable. I mean, it does. It feels like despite Jim Harbaugh saying play and Trevor Lawrence and President Trump, everybody saying, you know, play college football. The Mountain West has just canceled the college football season. That's on the heels of, what was the other?
The MAC.
The MAC.
Yes.
Canceling college football. So now, and then it was a report, was it Dan Patrick, that the Big Ten is expected to cancel college football. And I'm reading out of the Detroit Free Press. The Big Ten is expected to cancel the 2020 college football season in a historic move that stems from concerns related to the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. Multiple people with knowledge of the decision told the Free Press, "It's done." One high-ranking source in the Big Ten said Monday afternoon.
Yeah, now a couple of points of clarification. Number one, there were reports after that Free Press report came out that said the Big Ten presidents haven't decided anything, but the decision could be announced as early as tomorrow. Number two, there is an expectation that the Pac-12 could very well follow suit. Our guy John Wilner over at the San Jose Mercury News, best Pac-12 insider we know, wrote a story this morning for the San Jose Mercury News in which he said, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten are basically in lockstep with each other, and whatever one does, the other will do. Now, there is also a report.
And this is good. Go ahead.
I'm looking at this. Well, I'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
But just, this is from the ACC. An ACC official told CBS Sports on Monday the conference, quote, absolutely intends on playing this fall. Quote, we are trying to move forward with playing. Absolutely, close quote, the official said.
Wow. I mean, could you possibly have the ACC, the Big 12, and the SEC say we're playing, and the Big 10 and the Pac-12 say no?
It seems
are they that out of sync with each other?
For me, for you, it seems like as traditionalists, I don't know how you would do that. I don't know how you would reasonably crown a champion in a sport, if only three of the Power Five are going to play,
you'd crown two champions.
You know, I mean, would you
a fall and a spring champion?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose. And then there's turmoil within the Big Ten.
This is great.
A second ago, Harbaugh wrote a letter. Hey, our testing is fine. We shouldn't cancel this. Ryan Day, basically the coach of Ohio State, came out and said, "Man, we should absolutely play." Iowa and Nebraska both voted against this, according to the Free Press. And now here's Nebraska head coach Scott Frost.
This is unbelievable.
We hope to play Big Ten football this year, but we will consider all options.
We want to play a Big Ten schedule. I hope that's what happens. Our university is committed to playing no matter what that looks like and how that looks. We want to play no matter who it is or where it is. So we'll see how those chips fall. We certainly hope it's in the Big Ten. If it isn't, I think we're prepared to look for other options.
Threat. There it is. Here's your threat.
Uh-huh.
You cancel the Big Ten season, we're out of here. Nebraska, Iowa, Ohio State, Michigan, gone. We are gone. If you decide to cancel this season, we're leaving. And we're not coming back. We're going to go play somewhere else. And we might not come back. And that is a – now, if I'm the Big Ten, I don't have everybody on the same page here. I don't have – now, it's not – listen, the coaches aren't making that decision. The presidents ultimately
– sure.
Same thing.
The presidents make this decision.
The presidents will make the decision.
They're the ones who are making this decision.
But,
they
you know,
for
you're,
every school.
You know, the Nebraska senator, Ben Sasse, sent a letter to the Big Ten presidents pleading with them to hold the 2020 college football season.
Yep.
Pleading.
The coaches, according to Pete Thamel, are livid as they're preparing to deliver this news. Bruce Feldman, longtime college football insider, tweeted this morning that he contacted a source over at the Big 12 with reports that Iowa, Michigan, Nebraska, and Ohio State are exploring a potential move to the Big 12. Quote, that would be news to us, close quote, and yet those rumors are out there. I mentioned Ryan Day, the head coach of Ohio State, swinging as hard as we possibly can right now for these players. This isn't over. Hashtag fight. Ohio State and Michigan's official Twitter pages, right? Their football team's official Twitter pages are retweeting players who are saying, let us play, let us play, let us play. So the presidents are on the verge of voting the season down for the fall.
And I think the vote was
12-2.
12-2.
Nebraska and Iowa were the two that voted against.
Okay.
The players for those programs are saying, let us play. And the programs themselves are retweeting their players saying, let us play. And yet the presidents, ultimately the shot callers and all this. Now, again, the Free Press reported what they reported this morning. It has not been confirmed. It's expected it could happen tomorrow. It's expected the Pac-12 could follow suit tomorrow. Your question hangs over the air like a giant storm. I don't know what the Big 12, the SEC, and the ACC would do if those three have to go it alone without the SEC.
Greg Sankey is the SEC commissioner, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was very vocal today. Here's what he said. Best advice I've received since COVID-19. Be patient. Take time when making decisions. This is all new. You'll gain better information each day. SEC's been deliberate at each step since March. Slowed the return to practice. Delayed first game to respect start of fall semester. So they're saying be patient. Now, you do feel like you're running out of time here. I mean, it's the middle of – we're getting into the middle of August this
August
week.
10th right now.
Right. You want to play football games in a month?
Your altered schedules were supposed to start, anywhere from a month to a month and a half.
And there's
right
some
now.
Schools that can't play right now. There's some schools that can't practice right now.
Yep.
There was one school, it's like, we're not going to have any contact. We're just going to – are you risking injury to the kids if you can't get them to practice before they play? So I think that some of these schools are looking at the calendar and saying, we're out of time.
Yeah. And that's something that Heather Dinich talked about on ESPN. How is it that 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, we were talking about schedule releases and now we're talking about canceled seasons?
It was a combination of factors. I mean, you have the MAC decision. That was extremely important because it was the first FBS conference to postpone fall sports. But there's also been a lot of outspoken players from the Pac-12, from the Big Ten, from the Mountain West Conference who have spoken up about concerns about playing during COVID-19. But I think a real big driving force in the quick turn of conversation has been a significant concern from the medical advisory committees from each of these conferences about the unknowns of the lasting impacts of heart effects from the coronavirus. There are a lot of unknowns, and you heard MAC Commissioner John Steinbrecher talk about that when he talked about their reasons for postponing fall sports. So that's a big question mark right now.
How long are you going to wait? How long is it going to take to find out what the long-term effects to your heart are from getting COVID-19? I mean, people are only getting COVID-19 within the last 6 months.
Of course.
So, like, what do you want to wait 2 years to see what the studies show on people's hearts? Like, I just don't know that, like, that doesn't seem reasonable to me. I understand there could be some long-term health effects, but I think you're going to have to monitor people on a regular basis. I mean, listen, this is what they do. They play football. I mean, it's a job to some, and to others, it's just what they do. It's their livelihood. It's what they've done their whole lives. College football is a big, big business.
Of course. Of course. Unfortunately, you know, the Mountain West, I imagine it was the same with the MAC. With the Mountain West and the MAC having lost all of their big money games against the Power 5 schools, the money to be able to pay for the testing necessary to be able to play, that became a big problem for those conferences over the weekend. If the Power 5 do play, how many guys are going to opt out? How many guys are going to say they don't want to play? How many guys are going to choose?
A lot.
You know, and do you have enough to continue without them? I don't know the answer to that question.
And it's already been, I don't know if I put this in my email to you today, there's already been a lot of players that have opted out.
Oh, yeah. There were like six with Maryland on Friday alone. There are a whole bunch all over the sport. It's interesting. Kirk Herbstreit, who we obviously think of as the main college football analyst for ABC, ESPN, obviously one of the leading voices in the sport from a media standpoint, and of course huge ties in the Big Ten, given that he's a former player at Ohio State. He tweeted out about an hour ago, to be clear regarding the Big Ten and their impending announcement, they are looking to delay the start of the season, not to cancel the start of the season. So for all of those who are saying cancel, 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 Kirk Herbstreit saying it's not cancel, it's delay. It's not cancel, it's postpone. So whenever
but that's not what the story said, that the presidents voted 12-2 to end fall sports in the conference.
Fall sports. fall sports.
Yeah.
So you'd play it in the spring. So not.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, that's
yeah.
that's the difference between cancel and postpone. Cancel suggests done.
Yeah, right.
There's no season.
No, everybody's going right.
Well, okay,
move to the spring.
But that's what Herbie's pointing out on Twitter, and I think it's good to point out. You say the word cancel, and people make it say it, like it's gone and it's never coming back. Postpone means we're not doing it in the fall. We're going to try and do it in the spring.
Which leads to a lot of challenges.
Kids,
the NFL draft is right around the corner. Kids may decide not to play. And how do you squeeze two college football seasons in such a short amount of time?
Absolutely.
Because those kids are going to get done playing and then basically have to ramp back up about 6 weeks later.
I suspect tomorrow is going to be a historic day for college football, one way or another, good or bad. I'm not saying historic like in a good connotation. It's going to be a day that will be long remembered in the history of college football.
If you're the Big Ten, I'm now worried about some of my programs leaving if I decide that I'm going to postpone.
Coming up, Diamondbacks pitching staff got knocked around once again yesterday in San Diego. Was there a missed opportunity for the D-backs to send a message? Some think so. We'll tell you who next on the Burns and Gambo Show. The Arizona Diamondbacks are back in action today, taking on the Colorado Rockies. And unfortunately for the Diamondbacks, things did not go very well for them in San Diego over the weekend. Lost 2 of 3 to the San Diego Padres. Thank goodness for Merrill Kelly. He pitched very well again.
He was outstanding,
Merrill
Kelly.
In that game, yes.
So good for Merrill Kelly.
The main number, though, in dropping 2 out of 3, at least the main takeaway for me, not only was the 4 home runs that Mad Bum gave up yesterday in the first 11 batters he faced, the 6 home runs total that they gave up in just yesterday's game alone. The Arizona Diamondbacks have now given up as a pitching staff 37 home runs this year. There isn't another team in baseball that's in the 30s. The next closest is the Seattle Mariners at 28.
Well, and that's where, you know, that's where Bob Brenly got, you know, got upset with the amount of home runs that the Padres were hitting and said something that has become somewhat controversial over the last, you know, 24 hours or so.
Okay, what is it?
You know, Brendley's comment, and I'll get it for you here. I thought you might have had it.
No, I'm sorry. I did not have it in front of me. I thought you were going to read it off.
His comment was, okay, hold on. I'm going to get it for you. So just bear with me.
Oh, okay. Well,
yep. I did not have it ready. But he basically said that the Diamondbacks need to, and he didn't say throw at the Padres players.
If
you have it, yeah. I'm trying to scroll down my. Okay. I got it too.
Okay. Go ahead. You're fine. You got it. Go ahead.
All right, just go ahead. I'm screwing this whole thing up. You go.
Okay. The comment that he had was that no team he has ever been on would allow 6 homers and not put someone on their back.
Right. Okay. Now, people misinterpreted that. A lot of people. There's a story in the New York Post that says Bob Brenly says that you need to bean the Padre players. No, he didn't say that you need to bean the Padre players. He didn't say you have to hit anybody. He didn't say you have to throw at their head. What Bob Brenly meant, and this is the problem with people that maybe don't understand baseball, he didn't say you got to hit somebody. He just said, you know, put them on their back. That very much means making people uncomfortable. Make them uncomfortable in the batter's box. Pitch inside. Clearly, if they're hitting 6 home runs off of you, they're very, very comfortable in the batter's box if they're taking those hacks and hitting 6 home runs. If the Diamondbacks are giving up this many home runs, players are coming to the plate, and they're very, very comfortable hitting off of Diamondbacks pitchers. How do you make them uncomfortable? You pitch inside. What's one of the things that happens when you pitch inside? Well, sometimes guys got to hit the dirt because the ball's inside. And I believe that that's what Brenly meant. He never said, there was a story in the New York Post today, they need to bean the Padre players. Brenly said that. No, he did not say that you need to bean the Padre players. Did not say that. He didn't mean that. I mean, people are misinterpreting that the wrong way, and it's a shame. You know, because, you know, Bob Brenly's being said, you know, said, oh, old school, the game's not played that way anymore. Never said that you need to bean a player on the Padres. He never said that.
Now, full disclosure, and the reason why I was setting you up for the comment was because once that game got out of hand yesterday, my attention turned somewhere else. So I didn't hear Bob Brenly say it. All right. So I don't have the proper kind of context here. And so I was assuming that you were watching the game at the time when he said it and you were able to put it in its proper context.
I was watching the game when he said yes.
I was not. So that's why I was looking to you to kind of set it up because I wanted to know how he said it. I wanted to know when he said it. Because I did not see the New York Post report either. I didn't realize somebody was taking issue with something Bob Brenly had said regards to that game. But there is a difference between saying you got to put somebody on their back and hit somebody. And if you believe in the context that he was saying it yesterday, that he was referring to pitching inside and not hitting somebody, that's a totally different story. Now, I'm assuming a baseball writer from the New York Post wrote that, so I'm assuming it's somebody who knows the game.
Bob Brenly wanted Diamondbacks to drill Padres hitter after home run barrage. That's the headline in the New York Post.
Okay.
Bob Brenly wanted the Diamondbacks to drill Padres hitters. He never said to drill Padres hitters. Never. That's a lie. That's fake news. That's not true. Bob Brenly never said to drill anybody. He never said to hit anybody. It's a complete fabrication of what Bob Brenly meant. People don't understand what he meant because they don't understand baseball. I actually tweeted I actually sent a message to the woman who wrote the story in the New York Post, and she explained to me. She goes, "Listen, I didn't write the headline." I said, "I totally get that. I get that." I go, "But you know, if they're hanging you out to dry, you need to say something to the headline writers." She said, "I didn't write the headline. I just don't." I said, "Look, I get the newspaper business. I used to be there. I understand you did not write that headline. Bob Brenly wanted the Diamondbacks to drill Padres hitters after home run barrage. He did not say that." He never said to hit anybody. He never said to drill anybody. He never said throw at anybody. What he meant was that these guys are hitting six home runs. You got to put them on their back. And that's, your son played baseball, you know, at a high level in college, you know, putting a guy on his back, you could throw something, you know, up and in that's not going to hit him. That makes a guy go to his back. Doesn't have to be hitting somebody.
Well, when you've done the damage that the Padres did to the Diamondbacks over the weekend, and like I say, it was losing two out of three, and it was home run central. It was three home runs on Friday by the Padres. Cronenworth, Tatis, Oliveras. On Saturday, I believe it was two more home runs. Fernando Tatis had a solo shot off of Rondon in the first inning of that game. It was a barrage of home runs by the San Diego Padres, and it didn't look as if anything was being done about it. Like I said, I didn't hear what Bob had to say about it, but it's kind of curious that he's getting the attention that he did. Something else curious happened over the weekend that was kind of hard not to notice. Friday night, and we don't want to spend a lot of time talking about a game that happened, you know, 3 days ago. But on Friday night, Luke Weaver pitched only three innings.
Yes.
And Troy Lovello made it very, very clear after the game, please do not call him an opener. That is not what you should call this. Even though it was very obvious from Torrey's comments after the game
that he was an opener,
that he was there to pitch through the lineup one time for San Diego, and that was it. Sounds like a duck, walks like a duck, and yet we're not supposed to call it an opener.
I've been looking to see if they could use an opener for Robbie Ray, and I had some ideas that they were looking to do an opener in a different way, but not for Robbie, because I believe that they need to do an opener for Robbie Ray. They ended up using Weaver as an opener, and he went out there, and he took him out early by design. I'm telling you, I think the opener is coming. Weaver gave up three solo home runs in three innings. The home run barrage. He gave up the leadoff home run to Tatis to start the game. His ERA is at 12.19. They got to figure out what to do out of Luke Weaver. Some of these guys are having problems the second time through the lineup, not the third, but they're having problems the second time through. And I think that Luke Weaver said it was a shock, but I think this is something that the Diamondbacks need to experiment with to see if that's the way to go. Now, I think ideally you're better off starting a reliever and have him pitch two innings and then have Weaver come in for the third, the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth.
Here's what Torrey said after the game Friday.
He spoiled us a little bit, and we felt like because his pitch count was rising and climbing through summer camp that he'd be in a really good spot. And he is. But like I said, we got to be fair to him, knowing that he has missed a lot of time. So we just thought of backing off. I'm not calling this an opener. Please don't, you guys. This is a situation where we just felt like it was going to help him continue to move forward and get back into that form that we saw before he was injured last year.
One way or another, I worry about that D-backs bullpen over these next three games. They're in Colorado starting tonight. They got Robbie Ray tonight. They've got Luke Weaver coming up in game three of the series. How many innings are they going to need to cover with those two guys starting those two games?
That's
going to be a lot.
That's why they're not going to name Alex Young as the replacement starter for Madison Bumgarner. They totally expect that they're going to have to use Alex Young out of the bullpen in this series against Colorado, which is why they are undetermined on who will fill in for Madison Bumgarner right now.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station, the Phoenix Suns winners again in the NBA's bubble. Now 6-0. Have the odds turned in their favor? What work do they still have to do? We'll tell you next here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station.